Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. I'm Tom Stauber. I'm here with Sam Lady. We have a great show for you today as we look at Premier League action from the day. We'll preview action tomorrow in the Premier League as well. We've got Champions League results and the group of 16 heading to the next round. We've got the logjam that is the English Championship, and we'll take a look at some off-season activity in the MLS, and, of course, the game predictor. But, Sam, we start with the Premier League fixtures from today, and we're going to go to London and look at the Arsenal-West Brom match where Mikel Arteta fired home twice from the spot. Arsene Wenger's side found a much-needed 3 points at home against a West Bromwich Albion team that has now dropped 3 straight matches. Sam, despite Arsenal returning to the winning ways, I think the main talking point of this match is going to be the embarrassing dive from Santi Cazorla that resulted in the first penalty. Referee Mike Jones comically pointing to the spot right away without hesitation. Replays clearly show little, if any, contact at all. Either way, Arteta finishes from the spot, and Arsenal takes an unjustly 1-0 lead. Any thoughts on the dive, Sam, and Arsene Wenger getting his side back into winning ways here?
Well, I think it's one of the situations we have right now with the beautiful game, Todd, certainly the Premier League. You know, most of the time after games now, we spend time talking about, you know, the managers getting sacked, you know, the sack race, or we talk about players diving and. Yeah, I haven't got a chance to see the replay myself, but I think very often when these players dive, it's instinctive. You know, it's something that something they've perhaps, you know, a little bit of role play where they've seen that when they've been growing up watching the heroes on television, perhaps. But it's certainly something that has marred the game, and it's sad that becomes a talking point. But, in terms of the results,
it is too bad, and it seems that we keep having these conversations regarding Spanish players that seem to be doing more of the diving in the Premier League. Any thoughts on that, on the Latin-flavored player that seemed to be getting accused of the diving in the Premier League?
Well, you know, I think, historically it always been players from the continent. I'm not going to pick on Spain directly like you have, but typically players in the continent have been a little bit more creative, shall we say, and they've been looking for that, you know, that winning edge. We always talk about, you know, what qualities these great players have brought to the Premier League, but they, you know, that is a quality that they brought that it's a bad quality, as Jose Mourinho would say. And unfortunately, you see it now even with the, you know, the home-based players have been at times getting sucked into diving. In simulation, you know, look at Phil Neville a few weeks back against Liverpool. Even his brother on when he was commentating the game said, "Oh, Phil, what are you doing there, son?"
That was a classic. Well, the good news is in the second half there was absolutely no question on the second penalty. Chris Brunt chopping down Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, setting up Arteta's second goal, which he calmly hit straight up the middle, I might add. Just his third goal of the campaign, though, for Arteta in 15 matches. A little disappointing there from Arteta, but I will say that I did like the lineup that Wenger put out today, Sam. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who I think is obviously a very talented guy and gives Arsenal a lot. I'm looking forward to him becoming more and more a mainstay in their starting 11. But he was active. Jack Wilshere and Arteta starting to show good signs in the midfield. The odd man out today was, oddly enough, Lukas Podolski. He did come on as a very late substitute and missed an absolute sitter from 6 yards out. But Wenger decided to throw Cazorla up front with Giroud today. Arsenal looked fluid at times. Maybe I would even go out on a limb and say like the Arsenal of the past. But what do you think about Podolski being the odd man out here at Arsenal?
Well, I've always liked Podolski. I find it strange, though, that nobody's actually bought him before this year because, you know, certainly you see the display for Germany over, you know, the last 6 to 8 years. And he's a great technician. He works hard. He's got a fantastic left foot, and he puts the ball in the back of the net. So I'm surprised that nobody has snapped him up before now, but you know, it's a good match for him. You know, Podolski and Arsenal is a good match. They'll get the best out of him, and vice versa. He's been a little bit disappointed, I think, that he's been playing on the left flank because he sees himself as more of a central striker. I just don't know if he's got the pace required to play as the you know as the number nine up there. But yeah, you know, you look at the Arsenal team. You know, you put a Walcott in there, but it looks to me, Todd, that Walcott's going to be on his way in January. You know, Wenger's been out this week in the press saying that he's becoming more frustrated by you know every week, and you know Walcott's either got to sign or he's got to go. So the fact that he hasn't signed anything, and you know, would suggest that Walcott is on his way.
I would think that he's definitely on his way out. He wasn't even, you know, in the bench today, obviously, but it looks like he's on his way out. But, you know, having said that, I actually like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain better than Theo Walcott. I think he's got more of an upside to him and more room to grow, where I feel Theo Walcott is just, you know, there was the big push that he was the next up-and-coming player for England here a couple of years ago, but he really, really kind of leveled off.
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of Oxlade-Chamberlain. I agree. I think he's got a better range than Walcott. I think he's got more tools. You know the fact that he was potentially man of the match when Arsenal played AC Milan in the Champions League last year in a central position. You know, running with the ball from deeper areas, centrally. And, you know, I know Walcott doesn't have the capability to do that.
Right.
You know, Walcott is more of a winger slash you know central striker, but you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, he's got the tools to play in any position. He's very, very strong, Todd, right? He's a beast, right? You can't say the same thing again about Walcott, but, I'm a big fan of his, and he's still a young boy, right? He's not been at Arsenal very young. He could potentially end up having the same type of impact that Thierry Henry went to have at Arsenal, but obviously, you know, he's a few years away from doing that. But, yeah, I'm a big fan. I like him. I think he's a massive player for Arsenal now, and I think he may be a monumental player for Arsenal in the coming years.
Well, it'll certainly be fun to watch him continue to develop. And I think we, you know, say what you will about Arsene Wenger, but one thing that he has done consistently is develop young players into very, very good players. As you look at the list of guys that have gone through there, you know, you can see that that's one of his strong points. And I think Oxlade-Chamberlain is in good hands with Arsene Wenger, although I hesitate to say that for other reasons. But I will say now, Arsenal, all of a sudden, you know, they're just right outside of a Champions League spot, sitting in sixth on 24. West Brom now, as I mentioned, dropping three straight after a great start to the season. Still sitting in fifth spot on 26 points. They're going to be looking to get back on form here in the next week. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. Listeners can call in and talk with us live today at 760-283-0846. Still waiting for that first caller, Sam. Our offer of a free date with you didn't seem to incite many callers last week, so we might have to up the ante this week. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available, and a must for any player coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. Sam, we're going to move on to the Stadium of Light, where Fernando Torres scored twice, and Rafa Benitez finally found his first Premier League win. As Chelsea defeated Sunderland 3-1, Toro's almost found his hat trick, but his 49th minute effort hit the woodwork. Juan Mata followed that, and for Chelsea's third, and the game was essentially done in the 49th minute. Toro's found his first goal on 11 minutes when he got to Eden Hazard cross the near post. Second came from the spot in first half injury time. And Sam, you watched the game. Are we seeing a resurgence of Fernando Torres under Rafa Benitez, or is this just a blip on the radar against a very poor Sunderland team?
Yeah, I think we all saw this one coming, right? I mean, if Torres was going to get goals, you know, to give him a little bit of confidence there before they head off to Japan for the World Club Cup final, you know, you thought it was going to be against Sunderland on a bit of a bad a bit of a bad streak and on a bit of a downward spiral. Based on what I've seen today, I don't see that, you know, stopping anytime soon, Todd. What was interesting today about Torres's performance, and I think this is the work of Benitez, you know, Torres was finding better positions, Todd, in and around the box. You know, he was finding gap centrally between defenders. You know, perhaps under the last regime, under Robbie Di Matteo, when there was a little bit more of the rotation principles there, right? Where maybe he was dropping deep and other players were getting past him, or, you know, he was making little runs into the channel and midfield players were filling the space that he's left. You know, you weren't seeing that today. You were seeing Torres, you know, almost posting up, you know, like he used to do at Liverpool. And, you know, Torres looked a big threat today. And, you know, it's strange, Todd. Everything about Torres today looked different. I'm not saying that he's returned to his former glory yet, but a lot of things were different today. You mentioned that he had the post or the crossbar in the 49th minute. That was a shot, Todd, that he would not have taken on 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, he's taking risks. He's connecting. His technique looks better. It looks cleaner. It looks back to where it was. You know, he looks a little bit sharper and a little bit stronger than he was even, say, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he showed some incredible confidence, Todd, with their third goal. They got a penalty. David Luiz stepped up to take the penalty, and Torres basically brushed him off and said, "No, I'm taking." And I think that goes to show the level of confidence in Torres at the moment. That goal did him well. It was the first goal that he scored was a decent ball in from Hazard, and he made a run. And he actually finished with a sole of his foot on the volley. And he's just making those runs, Todd, that he used to make for Liverpool. And I think, you know, Benitez has obviously done a little bit with his positioning. And, you know, he wants his number nines in and around the box. He doesn't want his number nine out wide putting balls into the box on a regular basis. And, you know, I think you saw the benefits of that today. So, you know, the work of Benitez, he's obviously having...
You touched on a point, Sam, that I feel, obviously confidence with Fernando Torres has been a massive battle. When he's a confident player, we saw what he was capable of doing at Atletico Madrid before he came to England, at Liverpool, in his matches with Spain, when he was playing confidently. But he's a guy that if he's not confident, he drops so far off. And as Fernando Torres has played for two English sides that are my most hated teams, I've never been a huge fan of him going from Liverpool to Chelsea. But, however, I do respect him as a player, and it's good to see a player like this gaining some confidence and getting back to hit the form that saw him really become one of the top strikers in the world there for a bit when he was on form at Liverpool. And I think that as a coach and a player, you know this, Sam, that certain players click with certain managers as far as just the manager instilling a belief in that player. And when a player has belief, then they're going to go out on the field and try things. They're going to be more comfortable when they're getting on the ball. And just overall, their game, like you said, Fernando Torres looked like a different player today, just in the way that the player carries themselves. A confident player is just something that can be so dangerous when you're talking about a Fernando Torres or a top striker. And, while I doubted that Rafa Benitez was going to be able to bring Fernando Torres back to the level of glory that he found at Liverpool, today was a step in the right direction as far as that project goes. And you know, it'll be interesting to see if Torres can continue this run of form that he seems to maybe be finding.
Yeah, I think, you know, we can expect to see, you know, a fresher, you know, after this little break to Japan, a sharper and certainly more confident. You know, as you know, Todd, you know, you've played at a decent level. You know, if there's one thing that you need in a goal scorer, it's confidence. Because, you know, they take risks, whether it's running off the shoulder, whether it's just taking snapshots, you know, whether it's, you know, shooting through players' legs or, you know throwing themselves on the end of crosses. You know, it's, you know, strikers feed off confidence. You know, you can tell a striker when they're confident or not, because they're not taking the risk. They're not taking the shots that they would. You know, Torres even, you know, a few weeks or last week in the West Ham game, you know, he had good opportunities inside the 6-yard box, and he was trying to be, you know, too perfect and too accurate with it. And a Torres that's confident would have put his foot through that and been wheeling away celebrating. So I'm not a big Chelsea fan myself, as you probably know. But I'm a Fernando Torres fan, and I would like to see him become a bit resurgent because, you know, he was, you know, as disappointed as I was that he left Liverpool. You know, he's a fantastic player, and on his day, he's unplayable, and he had a lot of good days for Liverpool.
I agree, on his day, he is very, very difficult to deal with. He's a very, very big man. He's huge. He's got the pace. He's got the movement. He is a handful when he's on his day. Benitez could be the first manager that Torres doesn't get sacked at Chelsea. Earlier in the week, there was talk that Benitez could be on his way to surpassing Clothie's 44-day stint at Leeds United. It's the shortest managerial stint in Premier League history. And although Chelsea did, you know, as we'll talk about, dropped out of Europe this week, they now sit third in the table with this win. It's got to give Benitez at least a little bit of breathing room with the Chelsea fans and with Roman Abramovich and the whole situation surrounding his arrival and potential quick departure at Chelsea. What do you think about that, Sam?
Yeah, perfect way for them to sign off, Todd, before they head off to Japan. It'll give the players the confidence. You know, this look to Japan would be a bonus for them, you know, because it takes them away from the pressure. It takes Benitez out of the spotlight. It takes the players out of the spotlight and, you know, gives him a little bit more time, to have the players in a bit of isolation and, continue to, get his points across. Everybody knows, Benitez is a shrewd tactician, even though he tried to enter the second half in the final in Galatasaray against AC Milan with 12 players before somebody reminded him that he needed to make a sub to bring Didi Hamann on. he's a shrewd tactician, and he has a particular way about how he sets his teams up. And let's be honest, he was successful. I mean, he was the last manager to win anything in Spain, apart from Real Madrid, Barcelona with Valencia. He won the Champions League with Liverpool, got them to the final, 2 years in a row, and was very, very close to winning the Premier League, and probably ran out of a couple of games there in 2008 when they finished very, very strong towards the end of the season and finished runners up. So. I think we may see a new Chelsea now, but I think they need a few transactions in January. I think they need to get rid of John Obi Mikel and get somebody, a real player in there that can play, defensive centre mid. And they obviously need, support in the striking department.
Well, it'll certainly it'll be interesting to see what Benitez does when they go to Japan. I just feel this is a situation where they could now, after this, I could see them going in there. Torres is hot, gets a couple goals. I could see him going in and winning that thing. As much as it would pain me to see that happen, I could see Benitez pulling that off. Clearly that would give him a lot more breathing room. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens when they go to Japan to the World Club Cup and seeing how that shakes down. I'll tell you this, one team and one person who isn't heading to Japan is Martin Neal and Sunderland. They seem to be in some real trouble here, Sam. They did not look good at all today. Martin O'Neill has always been a manager that I've held in high respect, but they're sitting on just 2 Premier League wins in 23 attempts. And I don't see this project going well for Martin O'Neill at all at Sunderland.
Yeah, it's losing can become a little bit of a habit, right? And whether it's individual errors, Todd, like we saw a few weeks back in the Wigan game from the goalkeeper, or whether it's today they gave similar to West Ham in the first time last week. They gave Chelsea too much time and space on the ball. You can't let players of the quality of Hazard, be putting balls in the box without any pressure. They looked a team today in the position they're in. They looked edgy. There was a dodgy clearance from Barnsley that resulted in Mata's goal. They're a team on the slide. And, you're looking at the depth and the quality of the squad there, Todd. And you just don't know if, this may be the best thing that happens for Harry Redknapp, right? And there's going to be somebody that's on perhaps more of a slide than QPR. So, I'm really worried for Sunderland. I'm a big fan of Martin O'Neill. And, Todd, everyone knows Martin O'Neill, how he works. He's You know, he's not a long ball merchant, but his teams are very, very well organized, and they're always very difficult to beat. And, you know, you hope to retain, you know, your status in the Premier League that, you know, you win your home games, right? You win most of your home games, and you maybe pick up a point on the road here and there, but, you know, they're not doing that right now. So they're really on the slide, and I think they're either going to have to invest in January, or the owners may think about a better switch of coach. And, you know, knowing the character, you know, of Martin O'Neill, you know, he will not be happy with this, and he won't be satisfied. And, you know, maybe himself, he steps up in January and says, listen, this project's not working, and it's for the sake of Sunderland, it's time for them for change.
Well, I mean, he certainly had, obviously, good spells at Celtic, good spell at Aston Villa. I think he had more to work with in both of those situations. But, you know, I think it could take him a little bit more time. Like I said, he's got a proven track record. I would hope that Sunderland would give him some time. And even though they have taken just 2 wins out of 23, and, you know, they sit in 18th spot. They're 2 points, you know, out of getting out of the relegation zone, and I don't think things are lost. But I agree. I think probably Harry Redknapp is looking at this situation, thinking that might be one of the, you know, that's a team that he can jump as he goes on at Queen's Park Rangers. You're listening to Todd Sovereign, Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're here on Blog Talk Radio and backsportspage.com. Listeners can call in and talk with us live today, 760-283-0846, if you'd like to weigh in on the show. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. We are in England, Sam. Well, currently I'm actually in Spokane, Washington. You're in Seattle, Washington, but we are talking English Premier League. We're going to go over some other scores of the day. Villa, Stoke, 0-0. Scintillating match that I'm very happy that I didn't watch. Southampton with a 1-0 win over Reading, and Southampton climbs them to 15 points. Gets them into 15th spot. It's not a bad win for them, Sam. Any thoughts on that, Sam, Southampton game?
Yeah, decent result. Obviously, another good result from Harry Redknapp, because that drops Reading a little bit further down there. And, you know, you look at Southampton, they had two promotions in a row, two promotions back-to-back. And, you know, I quite admire the way that they like to play. You wonder whether or not they can have the ability to play that way for the rest of the season. You know, how is it going to get if it gets to, you know, the end of January and February, and they've got to be picking up, you know, 12, 15 points or something, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, good result. You know, like Harry Redknapp said, it's managers in this position have always talked about that. You've got to beat the teams around you, right? And you've got to drag people down towards, you know, the positions that you're at, and hope to leapfrog them over the course of the season. And, you know,
yeah.
You know, I think if we're looking at the Premier League right now, Todd, and looking at, candidates for, you know, being relegated, you know, realistically, I mean, you know, I think we're probably picking, you know, any from, you know, 15 and down right now. And that's Southampton, Villa, you know, Wigan, you know, I think they've got too much to go down, but you never know. Sunderland, Reading, QPR, you know, really in it. And I think Reading are as well. And, you know, this would have been a great result for Sunderland today. If Sunderland could have picked up a result today, that would have really, really put them a little bit of space between them and Reading. And, but he's going to go all the way to the wire, I think.
Yeah, moving on, Norwich City with a 4-3 win over Swansea. Sebastian Bessong with yet another goal for Norwich. But your boy Michu with another 2 goals for Swansea. I believe that's 4 in 2 games for him. But both Norwich and Swansea sitting mid to high table here. Norwich in 11, Swansea in 8. A good result for Norwich. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's a good hard working side, Norwich. I really admire the commitment they play with. And, you know, they've got some fantastic results on the season. Last result of the day, Wigan QPR 2. Another draw for Harry Redknapp. 3 draws in 3 attempts. He's clearly getting more out of QPR than Mark Hughes was. He's on 7 points. Reading's on 9. He's 8 points out 8 points away from getting out of this relegation zone, Sam. QPR, they had they let it go a bit today. I felt that Harry Redknapp was in a good position in this match when Cisse scored in the 71st minute to have them go ahead 2-1. But it was just 3 minutes later, James McCarthy equalized for Wigan, and we played on the draw. Any thoughts on QPR, Harry Redknapp, and him getting out of this relegation zone, Sam?
Yeah, well, they can't buy a win, can they? And it's part of it is, you know, the job, you know, just goes to show the difficulty of the job that Harry Redknapp's got. This is, like I said in the last few weeks, last few shows, this is a massive, massive job, and, you know, maybe even too big of a job for Harry Redknapp. He's going to have to make some very, very shrewd choices in the January transfer window. You know, he's already come out and said that he's not going to spend a ton of money in January and put them in a deeper position because, you know, if they do that, they're going to be even in a worse position if in the event they get relegated. So,
well, and I don't think the ownership's going to give him the money to spend in January. The owner has dumped millions into this project. And, you know, is looking at them on 7 points, so I can't see him getting the money. But anyways, go on.
I had some talk of Robbie Keane today, right? So maybe a couple of loan signings may make sense for them to ease the sort of wage bill and stuff. But, you know, they can't buy a win. You know, looks like they conceded a goal again from a set piece. You know, like I said last week, every time I see QPR concede a goal, it tends to be from a set piece. So, you know, they're very porous in that position, so they've got to fix that. And, you know, they weren't able to hold on to the win. They were leading the game twice. And, you know, Wigan, you know, dragged himself back into the game. I think that, you know, if they could have held on for another 10 minutes after they scored their second goal, this might have been a game they'd gone on to win. But, you know, conceding that goal so quickly, I mean, just gone 2-1 up. So I think that was a big kick in the groin for Redknapp and QPR because they would have been desperate for those 3 points today. And probably it would have been a game that he would have looked at and thought, hey, if we're going to get a win here, right, this maybe is the first one. And, he may be happy with that point coming the end of the season, but I'm sure he would have wanted 3 coming into it.
Well, no, next week they'll travel to Loftus Road to take on Fulham. And maybe that's the day for Harry Redknapp. Maybe that's when he gets it. We shall see. We're going to look at tomorrow. Going to be a fantastic day in the Premier League. We're going to start with Manchester United, Manchester City, at the Etihad Stadium. This is going to be just a fantastic game. City is in need of something, and they're going to be pressing at home. United has shown an inability to defend, but an ability to pull games out and score goals. I think it's going to be a goal fest, Sam, and I think it's going to be a very fast-paced game, and I'm looking forward to watching this game. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a great game on paper, right? Both teams very, very porous. You know, both teams look pretty shaky at the back. You know, although Man City have seemed to have cleaned that up a little bit, they've got a little bit more consistency there now. You know, even to this day, I don't know if Mancini knows what his best back four looks like. And as you know, any manager that doesn't know that, it's a problem. Because you're always second-guessing yourself. Anytime a player makes a mistake, you know, you're benching them and bringing somebody else in. So, I think you're right. This could end up being a goal fest. It's just set up for Mario Balotelli. You know, he's been very, very quiet recently. He hasn't done a lot. You know, he got dropped for a couple of games because Mancini was disappointed with his attitude. You know, he's just had his ex-girlfriend, he's just recently had a child this week, so he's become a father for the first time. So, you know, it's set up for Balotelli to get the winner and probably end up dropping his drawers and displaying some T-shirt that welcomes his newborn child to the world. But it wouldn't surprise me if this is a stage that Balotelli, because, you know, he tends to pick and choose, right, when he wants to play. So he probably sees this game, and Mancini sees this game, saying, right, this is a game where Mario's going to have a big impact. And I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it came out this morning. It looks like Tom Cleverley's out for Manchester United. Do you think this is a game we'll see Paul Scholes in?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we may see Rooney in a deeper position, right? We may see Chicharito. You know, we're definitely going to see Van Persie. We've got Welbeck. You know, we may see Rooney in a deeper position. You know, I think the challenge that Man United have got this season is they're obviously great going forward, right? The attacking four or five that they have, Todd, including Valencia, if he plays on the flank, you know, coming from deeper positions, that attacking four or five have got goals in it. But it's the 5-6 behind them that I think is the problem. You know, there's not a consistent back line for Man United right now, and I think if Man City are going to get at United, Todd, it's going to be in midfield. I don't know if Scholes is going to start the game. Certainly, you know, his tackling has been, his well documented, has been horrible. So this is a game with the emotion tied that Scholes will probably see enter, you know, 60 minutes in if it's not going United's way. But, you know, I just don't know how Man United are going to come to grips with Yaya Toure and David Silva and, you know, the players they've got in there. This could be a 3-2 with Balotelli getting the winner and doing a streak and running off through the crowd. My time is
gone. Yeah. I'm definitely not looking forward to seeing that. However, I do think it's going to be a goal fest. And I do, you know, as much as I love Manchester United, the problems in the back, you know, are just, it's something that I don't think can be solved with the personnel they have there. I think, obviously, Vidic's return will help. It looked as though that might happen this week. However, it's not. It's been pushed back an extra week. When Vidic comes back into the side, on paper, that will help. But it'll be, you know, it remains to be seen how well he comes back off of this surgery. He spent a lot of time out in the last, you know, 9 months. And although, you know, you would look at the situation and say, wow, this is going to really help us to get Vidic back, there's no guarantee that he's going to be at the form that they need him to be at. I've spoken of Rio Ferdinand, you know, when he's changing direction, it looks like somebody's driving a school bus. It's so slow. I just think that his days are not just numbered. I think his days are over. And Ferguson's having to play him just because there's nobody else. You know, Johnny Evans is a guy who he feels like the new Johnny O'Shea at United, where they can, you know, play him in a couple different spots, but he's not a player that's really going to take them to the next level. Like, you know, when Vidic arrived and his partnership with Rio Ferdinand was established a couple of years ago, you knew that Vidic here was a player that this was going to potentially change United's defense for years to come. I don't feel that way with Johnny Evans. With Smalling, with Phil Jones, you know, Alex Ferguson talks about those two in very high regard, but however, you know, injuries and whatnot, we just haven't seen them have a big impact on the defending unit of Manchester United. So I just don't I don't see it within the squad that they have there. I think that this is I think that Manchester United will be exposed tomorrow. With the attacking options that Manchester City has, there's no question. Balotelli, Tevez, I mean, you know, I think it's going to be a matter of if Manchester United wins that game, can they score more goals than Man City? And that's really what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I think we can expect to see everything in this game, penalties, sendings off, and a lot of goals, and it's certainly a great game for the neutral. I'll be watching this game, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Good. Well, moving on tomorrow, Goodison Park, Everton, Tottenham, DVD bringing all of his recording equipment to Liverpool. And, you know, Everton right now with a chance to move into the top five with a win tomorrow. And obviously DVD will be looking to keep Tottenham in the top four. As they travel there, any thoughts on this game? And you know, it's funny because as hard as we are on AVB and and everything that he does, you know, you pull up the table and there's Tottenham sitting in fourth spot, Sam.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Like, it's, you know, the press of the opportunity. Well, the best thing that's happened to DBD was Rafa Benitez, because now the press are spending their time berating Benitez and helping the Chelsea fans in potentially getting him sacked. So, you know, DBD is a little bit of time in the background, you know, these last few weeks, and I think that's great for him. You know, the jury's out with AVB, but you know, he seems to have got, you know, Tottenham, you know, playing at a consistently high level. They started very, very strong against Liverpool, you know, a few weeks back, and you know, this is going to be a tough game. You know, Everton sort of not. You know, looking at the last couple of results here, 1-1 with Man City, 1-1 with Everton, 1-1 with Norwich, 2-1 loss against Everton. They beat Sunderland, they tied with Fulham, they tied with Liverpool, you know. So, you know, this is a game that Everton will be looking to win. You know, they've not won a game here, Todd, in the Premier League since September 29th, right? So even though they started off pretty strong, very well documented with that win over Man United early in the season, you know, they've not picked up the points they would have hoped after that big start. So, you know, an Everton team, you know, this is a good, strong Everton team. So they changed their preseason schedule a little bit, and that's had an impact on how they've started. But, you know, I think this is a game they're going to be looking and wanting to win. Whether they have the ability to beat a Tottenham team that's got a bit of a rhythm right now, I don't know. But, you know, if they can stop Jermaine Defoe, if they can stop Gareth Bale, I think they've got a chance. But, you know, those are very, very big questions at the moment, because two players are very much on form.
Yeah. Well, since they're 5-2 defeat to Arsenal back on November 17th, Tottenham haven't lost a game in five results, including a 0-0 draw with Lazio in the Europa League and their 3-1 win from the past week against Panathinaikos. In there also is the 3-1 win over West Ham, 3-0 win over Fulham, and, of course, 2-1 win over your beloved Liverpool, Sam. But not a bad run of form here for them. And, yeah, we'll see if DVD can keep those boys in the top four with that match tomorrow. Last game of the day tomorrow will be West Ham and the aforementioned Liverpool FC. Sam, your thoughts on Liverpool going into West Ham? West Ham will obviously be looking to continue on the form that they showed last week when they beat Chelsea.
Yeah, two different teams, Todd. West Ham, terrible in the first half, and, you know, made up for that terrible performance by playing, you know, like a team possessed in the second half. You know, having said that, you know, Liverpool team, you know, with somewhat of a new methodology, with Brendan Rodgers and a new approach, you know, Liverpool going to have more of the ball than West Ham, that's for sure. So, you know, the question is going to be, you know, whether Liverpool can thwart the, you know, the long ball in picking up, you know, the scraps and picking up the second pieces. You know, with how Brendan Rodgers likes to play a centre-back when we're in possession, you know, centre-backs either side of the 18-yard box with the, you know, the full-backs pushed on into attacking positions, and that the Welsh genius that is Joe Allen, who plays in that controller position. You know, they may never go on this tomorrow, but I fancy Liverpool. They've been playing well recently. Obviously, Luis Suarez is out because he's picked up a suspension for 5 yellow cards of the season, so he's out. But, you know, Liverpool are a lot more than Luis Suarez, and I think Liverpool are going to win this one. I hope they do.
Good. All right. Okay. Well, we're going to move out of England, and certainly looking forward to tomorrow, though, and we'll be chatting about that next week. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. Listeners can call into the show and talk with us live, 760-283-0846. And just so you know, Sam, the phone lines are just they're just full. I can't keep track of all these calls coming in. It's very difficult. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. Well, Sam, we're going to move into the Champions League here, where this week showed the final 16 teams that are going to be moving on, and a couple big big teams dropping out of the competition in Manchester City and Chelsea. Overall, Sam, how do you feel about this group of 16 teams moving into the next round? Before we go group to group here, just give me your thoughts overall on the 16 teams moving on, and are you looking forward to the next round?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's you've seen by some of the performances in some of the group stages, a lot of teams pushing some of the more fancy teams start really, really close. And, yeah, obviously Chelsea dropping out and dropping into Europa Cup was a big one. But, you know, you're looking at the list of teams, you know, Paris Saint-Germain, Porto, Schalke, Arsenal, Malaga, AC Milan, Dortmund, Madrid, you know, Juventus, Munich, Valencia, Celtic. Let's not forget our friends from the north there, who I believe are still partying after the performance and the win against Barcelona some 2.5 weeks ago. Looking at it, you know, you've got a couple of teams that have dropped out. You know, City have dropped out, Chelsea have dropped out. You know, there's no Benfica in there. You know, isn't it St. Petersburg, who spent a lot of money recently on some high-profile players, are not in there. And, you know, I think it's all going to be down to the draw, Todd, to be honest with you. You know, I fancy a dark horse to get the semi-final, maybe a Paris Saint-Germain. Taking a little bit of a break away from the French league, you know, perhaps a little bit less pressure on guys like that. But you can't look past, you know, the Real Madrids. You can't look past Bayern Munich. You certainly can't look past Barcelona. And obviously Man United are going to be in there. Having breezed their way through the group while they're losing the last game. I'm interested to see what the draw looks like. I think if Man United get a really competitive opponent in this next group, you know, we may be in for an upset based on how poor they've been and, how poor they've been at the back.
Yeah, well, I think that the draw is going to be extremely crucial for Man United because their defending is not going to last very long in Europe if it continues at the level it's at. But if you look at the two teams coming out of Group A, PSG and Porto, I agree with you that PSG, and we've talked about them, you know, continuously on the show, that I just feel like they're a team that could do something special here in this Champions League. I think they're gonna bring some players in January that are gonna ease the squad in managing the French league and the fixtures in the Champions League. And I think that when they bring these players in January, that's going to help with them managing the two situations. Because let's be honest, a lot of this now comes down to how deep is your squad. And you can't just forget about your domestic games. You've got important fixtures at home domestically. You have important fixtures, very difficult fixtures on the road in the Champions League. And a lot of this is going to come down to who's healthy, how deep their squads are, and can they rotate the squads in the right way? Can the managers do that and find the right combinations at the right times? But we have talked about PSG. I feel that this is going to be a team that is going to do something there. But I think one key there with PSG is how stable is Ancelotti there? Because there's been some talk this week that, you know, Jose Mourinho may be going there. Maybe even something happening during the year, this year, of a managerial change. So I think they need to get some stability there with the manager and make sure that's sorted out. And then I think they could be a team that we're going to be looking at least in a semifinal.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, where there's money, Todd, there's problems, right? And there's a ton of money at PSG. You know, there's a ton of money at Chelsea. There's a ton of money at Man City. You know, and those are the three clubs that, you know, a lot of people are talking about now is potentially having, you know, coach changes. I certainly don't see Mancini leaving, but, you know, a lot of talk at PSG, right? Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it, you know, we're in the last 16 now, Todd. You know, you're looking at, you know, you've got to play six games to get to the final, right?
Yeah.
And if you're thinking about having to win your home game and maybe picking up a point, away or tying your return leg, you know, you can get away, Todd. We'll probably we're winning three games in time free, you know, having a favorable goal difference and finding yourself in a final. And I would like to see a team like PSG get there, even though it's been a you know, a funded project, and it's not something that's more homegrown like Barcelona.
Right.
I would like to see Ancelotti stay. I think he's a good manager. I think he's a good human being. Right? And, you know, I think, you know, by bringing so many players in, and players at that level, it takes time for them to gel.
It does take time, and you know, I think I also think Ancelotti's a good manager. I thought he got a real, that was a very harsh sacking at Chelsea at the hands of Roman. But it will be good. It will be good to see PSG get through there. Another team I think that could be a little bit of a surprise is Schalke, who won Group B with 12 points, and I see this is a very typical German side, hardworking, organized, and they've got some very good attacking options. Schalke and Arsenal coming out of that Group B, and with Arsenal, dropping the final match at Olympiacos with a chance to win the group, they dropped that match, Sam. And how do you think about these two teams coming out of Group B going into the final 16?
Well, I don't see Arsenal getting past the group of 16, but not based on how they're playing right now. Struggling with identity, struggling to get results on a consistent basis. They're very much up and down right now, which you can expect maybe with the volume of players they've brought in. Schalke, look like the real deal. You know, young German team. They've got players like Huntelaar and Jefferson Farfan, who can put the ball in the back of the net. But they've also got a couple of really, really solid support players brought in. And Christian Fuchs has got, 5-6 assists, I believe, in the, in the Champions League so far. And, this is a very, very strong team. You know, they've got Huntelaar, who knows where the back of the net is. But I think that they've got a lot of good players around him. And, they're well drilled, they're well organized, and they're a solid team, and a team that I would want to stay away from in this next round because they've got a bit of a rhythm.
Yeah, well, I think I agree. I can't see Arsenal going much further in the Champions League. I just don't think they have a deep enough squad to get much further. What do you think about Arsenal and them going on here?
I don't see Arsenal going through. Yeah, Arsenal, I think, they're going to drop out in the next round. If they come up against an AC Milan or Real Madrid or Dortmund, they could be on for a bit of a spanking, I think. Schalke, you can maybe see it, but yeah, I think it all comes down to the draw, Todd, you know? Comes down to the draw, and who gets the home advantage? Who gets the home game in the second leg? It's been such an important part of the Champions League talk. You know, the teams that have gone away from home in the first game and got a result, whether it's 1 point or and then gone home and won the games in the second leg. I can't see Arsenal getting past 16. Schalke, potentially depending on the draw, if they play a Real Madrid, who knows.
Well, yeah, I think for Arsenal, it's really going to depend on the draw for them. Because if they draw, a Malaga or somebody of that nature, I think they could maybe win something, but not against the big teams. They don't have the strength in their squad, I don't think, to play against the big teams on the big stage. I think that's something that Arsene Wenger is just missing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I said in the last few weeks, when he lost Alexander Song, when he lost Fabregas, he lost lost some big personalities, Van Persie, big personality, and they don't have anybody in there. Although they've got players that are good, very. I like Kozola, a big fan of Kozola, big fan of Podolski, like the guys that he's brought in, big Oxlade Chamberlain fan. I just don't think they have the experience to get them past difficult situations, whether it's you're winning a game and you need to, close the game out. I think they're lacking some experience in that area. And, I think ultimately that will result in them being out in the next round.
Well, I mean, and just to touch a little bit more on Arsenal, I mean, are they happy with this? Is this where, as a club, is this, are they happy being at this level, just a mid-range, dead average Champions League team for a club that has been, has accomplished so many things and once, you know, in the past, are they happy at this level?
Well, I think I certainly think the fans won't be, Todd, you know, but they're you know, every season it seems they're losing their top two players to Man City, you know, or to you know, obviously you can understand Fabregas and Son going to Barcelona, but yeah, it's a numbers game, Todd. You know, they it's all about the money, and if you you know, if you think about the type of individual that Arsene Wenger is, likes to identify, you know, younger talent, bring them in, nurture them, develop them, and then, you know, ultimately, it looks like selling money. Nobody could argue right now, Todd, that Arsenal are not a selling club. They are absolutely a selling club. And but at the end of the day, they're balancing the books. You know, Arsenal don't appear to be under a lot of debt. You know, you don't hear them having a lot of financial issues. You know, if they don't have a single backer, where if that person drops out like Chelsea, all of a sudden we're looking at the demise of Arsenal. You know, Todd, I think, you know, I don't know what the exact number is, but I believe they've got 50,000 to 60,000 people on a waiting list for a season ticket. You know, wow. For the Emirates, which is incredible.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, we'll certainly be keeping our eye on Arsenal as they go into the next round here. We're going to move on to Group C, where Malaga won Group C in their first ever Champions League appearance, and did quite well to do that. AC Milan coming in second place. I think AC Milan, even though they are coming in at second place, I still think AC Milan is going to be a major player as we move on here in the Champions League. What are your thoughts on those two teams, Sam?
Well, you can't rule out AC Milan, right? You know, the master tacticians, perhaps, you know, the Italians. And, you know, very much a team and a sort of culture that is set up to win these knockout games. You know, I think, you know, any Italian team is just hoping, Todd, that they get out of their group stage. And then when it gets into the, you know, knockout stage, now it becomes a lottery. And I think, you know, you can never look past an Italian team. You know, the Italian surprises a little bit, I think, in the, you know, the European Championships. But, yeah, I mean, you know, AC Milan is an institution, right? You can't look past that, Todd. You can't look past the history there. They're still a team that has got a lot of talent. You know, obviously they picked up Nigel de Jong this year from Man City, but they've got a ton of talent in that team. You know, obviously you can't look past Fabinho, right? He's an incredible player. And then Malaga, you know, perhaps they've surprised people. You know, they spend a lot of money, and by all accounts, they've got a lot of issues off the field financially. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure the owner is going to be very happy and satisfied that these guys have finished top of the group. You know, arguably, Todd, I mean, arguably you'd looked at them as being a team that maybe wouldn't have come out. I'm surprised that, you know, maybe they finished above Zenit St. Petersburg, who have got an incredible squad, you know, depth, talent, and
well, I think that's the biggest surprise. I think that going into the round of 16, Malaga has to be the biggest surprise. There's no question. But I definitely agree with you that when you talk about an AC Milan, it's a team that is built for these final stages of the Champions League. Again, I think the draw will play a huge role in the success of both of these teams. But I do see, you know, Malaga, I think that maybe they could pull off another upset and continue on in the competition, but I don't really see that happening. I do see AC Milan pushing on. When you look at Group D, however, I think you're looking at two teams that are, depending again on the draw, are teams that I would expect to be pushing for a semifinal spot. In Borussia Dortmund and Real Madrid, Sam.
Well, I'll tell you what, Todd, you know, some of the performances, you know, from Dortmund in the last couple of years, you know, they've perhaps gone a little bit, you know, unrewarded with praise. But when you get stuck in a group with Manchester City and Real Madrid and you come away, you know, with victories against those teams, Todd, you know that they've got a, you know, you've got a very, very strong team on your hands. And I'm telling you, I really think that with this Dortmund team has got the potential to go all the way. You know.
Yeah.
You know, they've got again, it's a similar situation to similar situation where, you know, the team is bigger than the sum of its parts, and, you know, similar to the Schalke, you know, another part of sort of German engineering there. You know, this Dortmund team, I think, has got the potential to go all the way, and I would put them certainly as being a team that's going to make the semifinals.
Real Madrid. Well, I think that when you talk about Dortmund, again, you're talking about a very organized team, just a very blue-collar, hard-working, and they believe, though. I think the difference with Dortmund is that there's a belief. You can see the belief in their players when they play. They're very confident. I think that they're very well managed, and you just see a confident side who believes in each other. And every time they step on the field, they think they're going to win, no matter who they're playing. It doesn't matter. I think the days of the Bundesliga being seen as a second tier league are maybe starting to go away with the Schalkes and the Dortmunds now joining Bayern Munich as top teams in Europe, and I see this team going up against anybody. You put them against Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester United. I see this team being a true threat in this competition going forward.
Well, they're unbeaten in six games in their league, right? Against in the Champions League. You're talking about Man City and Real Madrid here. And scoring 11 goals in the process. Right. And only conceding four. So I mean, that's we're not talking about them playing Olympiacos here or even Arsenal. You know, we're talking about them playing Real Madrid, in Ajax and Man City. I mean, when this group came out, everybody sort of sighed. And I think even Jose Mourinho, he was like, he's mentioned this time and time again in his interviews. Real Madrid and a Dortmund are teams that you would expect, or teams themselves are expecting to see themselves in the final. I mean, it was an incredibly strong group. I'm looking forward to
incredibly.
That.
Well, I will say that going on that group and just getting a chance to take a dig at City here, Man City became the first English Premier League team in the history of the Premier League and the Champions League to not win at least one game in the group stages. First English Premier League team in history to not win at least one game in the group stages of the Champions League, which I find unbelievable. Man City has now crashed out, not just of the Champions League, but out of Europe altogether, not getting that Europa League spot. Any thoughts on Man City and their crash out of Europe?
It may be, Todd, it may be a blessing in disguise for them not to have to worry about, I wonder if you'd ask Man City before the last game, do you want to play on a Thursday night in Russia, right, and then have to come back and retain the Premier League and play your Evertons and your Chelseas on a Sunday, or would you rather have better preparation time? And I think the answer would have been, better preparation time, I definitely think that, this is a blessing in disguise for them, not having to
play. Well, I think it was bad news for Manchester United when Man City crashed out, because you're exactly right. Now their complete focus is going to be on anything in England going on between the FA Cup and the Premier League. They're going to be able to put all of their resources, which we well know they have a plethora of resources. They can throw all of that at the Premier League. Moving on to Group E, we're going to talk about another big English side in Chelsea that did not go through, but we did have Juventus and Shakhtar both going through out of Group E. I see Juventus as another team, like an AC Milan, that's kind of put together for these final stages of the Champions League, and a team that I think is going to, depending on the draw, I think that they could be a team that sneaks into a semi.
Well, I agree. I mean, it really is all about the draw, Todd, isn't it, in this last 16? And who can, who gets matched up with where, and who gets the home advantage for that second leg? It's a very, very challenging place to go and play. And Juventus, I think they recently lost after 49 games unbeaten, a few weeks back to Inter Milan, but. When we're talking about the Italians, we know what we're to expect, and the Italians are set up to be the sort of kings of the knockout games. Shakhtar is a team that I think people will want to stay away from. It's not a place that I see a lot of coaches and teams wanting to play at. And, you know, they've got, you know, look at the play, some of the players they've got there. You know, they've got Adriano and William, who's been, you know, chased by DVD. You know, those guys, you know, every time I turn the television on, it seems those guys are scoring. So, you know, they've got that. It's not a good place for people to play. They've got good players. They're well organized. And, you know, anybody that comes out of a group with Chelsea in it is obviously a strong team.
Yeah, agreed. You know, we don't know as much about this Shakhtar team, but I think your point is well taken. If they're coming out of a group with Juventus and Chelsea in it, and they're coming out as one of those two teams, they're obviously a team that can play at a high level, and they could be a sleeper in this competition as we move forward. Again, the draw will play huge in that. Group F, no real surprises there. It was, I would say, probably one of the more boring groups of this round. Bayern Munich, Valencia coming out of this group. You know, I think I don't feel as strong about this Bayern side as I did last year, and I'm not even sure why, Sam. I think last year they were so dominant, and this year they're, you know, they've done well, and really a lot of the same players. But I'm not feeling as confident in this Bayern side as I was last year.
Yeah, I mean that may be talked a little bit because they've just cruised through the first phase, you know, almost like Man United, the same position United were in, you know, Bayern top of the group, level on points with Valencia, 13. And they've sort of cruised through it. They've had no bumps in the road. And so it's, you know, they're one of those teams that have not really been talked about. You know, I've not heard people talk about, you know, Bayern Munich. It's all been about Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, Manchester United, you know?
Well, maybe that's just it, Sam. I think you bring up a good point that they're just a little bit off the radar. Where they were on the radar, they were kind of a popular team to talk about and think about and follow last year. I think that maybe they have just fallen off the radar a bit here, and maybe the level really hasn't dropped.
Yeah, I mean, if we were to talk about, without even looking at the group stages now, Todd, if we were to say, right, who are your top eight teams in Europe? Who are going to be the top teams in the quarterfinal? Right, I think you would put a Bayern Munich in there, and you know, again, it's down to the draw. I see them making, I certainly see them making the semifinals. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I hope nobody goes back and re-listens to the show, because right now, Todd, I think I've calculated I've got seven teams in the semifinal. So,
I've got every team making the semifinal at this point, potentially.
It's a win-win.
Yeah, it is a win-win. You can't lose here. Moving on to Group G, where Celtic defeated Spartak Moscow 2-1 to continue the just amazing run that Celtic is on right now after their defeat of Barcelona a few weeks back that Sam mentioned. Barcelona, a 0-0 draw with Benfica. A little bit surprised there, Sam. Either way, Barcelona comes out. Celtic comes out of the group. Great thing for Scottish football. Great for Celtic and their fans that they're moving on. This is quite an honor, and it'll be, you know, obviously moving on to this round for a club like Celtic, it'll be a good payday for them as well. And maybe give them the opportunity to bring in some more players even.
Oh, yeah, the payday for this club is going to be significant. If we look back a few months and you saw this group come out, there's no way you see Celtic getting past Spartak Moscow, Benfica, and Barcelona. Barcelona clearly favourites to win the group. And then you're probably thinking Spartak Moscow and Benfica are fighting out for second, and Celtic would be the whipping boys. But you know, they haven't, you know, the result against Barcelona was, you know, monumental, right? Lennon's going to go down in history for that, as will the night of celebrations after. You know, any time you get Rod Stewart crying in public, it means something special, right? And the poor fellow was in tears having seen that result. I'm very, very happy for him. But I tell you what, you know, I saw the game, and, you know, funny, Neil Lennon said, you know, he couldn't. As soon as the penalty, as soon as Chris Coleman stepped off the penalty, the cameras turned to Lennon just before, and you know, Lennon couldn't watch. You know,
he's facing the stands.
Yeah, it was really sort of schoolboy's own stuff. He was nervous, like it was schoolboy hiding away in a closet. He just didn't want to see the penalty, and brilliant stuff. Very happy for Celtic. Great for Scottish football, right? You know, all the situations we've had with, you know, Rangers dropping out to the third division, and you know, the financial issues they've had there and the transfer blockade and everything else. It's a good moment for Scottish football. Great moment for Celtic, and very happy for Neil Lennon. I'm sure he looks happy.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It is great for Celtic and Scottish football. Group H, Man United, losing their last match to Cluj, however, it didn't matter. Galatasaray did defeat Braga and getting them the necessary points to go through second. You know, as we talked about with United, I think that this, you know, this defensive issue could be a problem with that for them in the next round. I clearly, being a United fan, I hope it isn't. But I have to be honest and look at the situation for what it is. And they could be in some trouble, especially if the draw puts them, you know, against a Barcelona or a Real Madrid right away. I think that, unfortunately, we could see Man United having a tough time here in this next round, Sam.
Well, you're right. I mean, I think they'll be hoping that they pick up a Celtic, right? I think they'll be hoping to pick up, you know, maybe a Valencia.
Or even an Arsenal to be.
Yes,
I mean, maybe Arsenal
saying,
could be their best draw.
Oh, they'd love to play Arsenal. I bet. Yeah, that would be 3 points in the bag and moving on, right? But you know, they play an AC Milan. I mean, if they get a Dortmund, they get a Paris Saint Germain, they get a Schalke. You know, they get a Juventus. I mean, wow, we're really getting down to the. You know, the nuts and bolts were there, and I think, yeah, maybe a problem for United. You know, I've actually run out of the stats now, Todd, because it's every week it seems to be growing that they've, you know, they've been the first team to concede the goal but come back. But I know you mentioned that losing this week to Cluj wasn't a big deal, but you know, I wonder about that. You know, I wonder, would a Man United team of 2-3 seasons ago have lost a game like that? You know, what does that?
I don't think they do.
Yeah, what does that do for their preparation for this weekend? They obviously rested a few players, but, you know, what does that do about momentum and rhythm and confidence? And, you know, what does that do for the next round? You know, they haven't played a good team yet in Europe. And, you know, it may be a little bit of a shock to the system, Todd, if they get a team with real quality. You know, let's be honest, they may end up getting matched up against Real Madrid. You know, Real Madrid finished second in their group behind Borussia Dortmund. You know, that's a potential matchup there.
Well, and AC Milan also finished second. You know, yeah, I think it. Yeah, it could be a tough one for them, but we'll see how that goes. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady. I'm from the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. Listeners can call into the show and talk with us live today, 760-283-0846. If you'd like to be on the show. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and the iPad. Sam, we're going to move back into England here just for a bit here to talk about the English Championship, the second division. It is an absolute logjam. Who will come up is an absolute mystery at this point. Cardiff and Crystal Palace sit top two spots. But Middlesbrough and Hull City are just 3 points behind Palace, and Leicester is just 4 points back there. Sam, only 10 points separate Watford, who sit sixth and in the final playoff spot, and Ipswich, who sit in 20th. Everything is up in the air here, Sam. What are your thoughts on the Championship?
Well, I think it's testament to the quality and the growth of the Championship. You know, and part of that all is due to the quality of foreign players that have been brought into the Premier League, and you know it's almost like the Championship is a breeding ground for, you know, for homegrown British talent, and you know, there's a lot of young talented players in this division. There's a lot of experienced players in this division that have been around in that division for, you know, for 5, 6, 7 years, and you know, I think that, you know, that adds to the quality. Look at Cardiff, you know, they've got goals in them. Crystal Palace, obviously, with you know, with Sahar there, Ian Holloway being the manager. Yeah, I mean, it'd be a tough one to pick, right? I mean, you'd expect to see, you know, the regulars up there, you know, the Cardiff, the Crystal Palace, Middlesbrough, you know, maybe not used to being in that position on a regular basis. But, you know, you expect to see a Blackpool pushing there, or a Charlton or a Blackburn or a Leeds, you know. It's that case talk.
Well, I mean, you've even got Millwall in the mix. They're tied on 33 points with Watford. They're in seventh place. I mean, they're just right on the brink there. Wouldn't it be great to see Millwall and their fan base get into the Premier League with West Ham there?
Yeah, that would be exciting. Yeah, it would be a disaster to police, because that means you've then got a Millwall West Ham, a Millwall Chelsea, a Millwall Arsenal, right? A Millwall Fulham derby almost every week. You know, the Metropolitan Police would shut down Todd having to try and police that. But I mean, I'm you know, I think you mentioned Brighton a few weeks ago. I like Gus Poyet. I like Brighton Hove Albion in terms of how they set up and how they like to play. And you know, let's look at this, Todd. Right? If you're looking at, and I thought, I mentioned earlier about the experience that is in the Championship now, whether that's the managers and the players, and also the youthfulness and the quality. If you were to think about a Championship team that was coming up, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, Todd, it would typically be the teams that were strong, physical, and dominant. You know, West Ham. But if we look at the teams that have come up in the last few years, whether it was Swansea a few years back, right, or whether it was Norwich or, you know, Southampton and Reading, those teams can play. You know, Southampton try to play the game the way it should be played. You know, Reading and McDermott, you know, they're trying to play the game, you know, the way that we would like to see the game play. So, you know, I think that's testament to the job that's been done by the coaches, and testament to the quality of that league.
I think the quality of the league has gone way up. I mean, if you look at this table, Sam, you mentioned Brighton and Hove Albion, who I also like. I'm a big Gus Poyet fan, but, you know, they're on 32 points in eighth place. I mean, the 10th place team is Derby. They're sitting on 30 points, 3 points out of the playoff. And underneath them, 11 through 15, all of those teams are on 29 points. Blackpool, Charlton, Blackburn, Leeds, Huddersfield, all on 29 points. Burnley just below them on 28. Bolton just below that on 26. Wolverhampton on 25. Birmingham on 24. And Ipswich on 23. And as you go down that table, you realize that these teams are just barely out of the relegation zone and also just barely out of being in a playoff spot. I'm looking forward to seeing how this goes. I think one of the most exciting elements of European football is promotion and relegation. And the chance for these teams to go to the Premier League, to get the Sky Sports revenue and just the money that comes along with getting that promotion, it's massive for these teams. It's everything to them and their fan base to get that potential promotion. And, you know, I think if you're looking at these, you know, 20 teams, that are in the hunt here, they've got a lot more to play for than, say, a mid-table Premier League team that knows that they can just kind of sit in the mid-table. They're not going to go down, but they're not going to be a team that really, you know, is pushing for a Champions League spot. But these teams, week in and week out, with this table so close, every single game is going to be vital, and it's going to be a playoff atmosphere every match as you go on in the Championship here.
Yeah, I think right. I tell you what, Todd, you know, I don't want to revert too much away from this, but, you know, looking at the Premier League right now, you know, with the exception of Man United and Man City, Todd, I think this has probably been the most open and the most open season that we've seen in a long, long time. I mean, it would be impossible. I mean, everybody's in the, you've got Swansea City, right, 3 points off a Champions League position right now, right? Liverpool, even though it's been documented that they've had a poor start, you know, that they're only 6 points off. You know, a couple of wins on the bounce, you know, against the teams in and around you, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got Norwich City, Todd, in, you know, sitting in the fourth position going into Christmas. And, you know, I think everybody, Todd, I'll be honest, I think everybody probably from, you know, 10th, from probably Liverpool and Fulham and Newcastle position, you know, they're looking at that saying, hey, we've got a chance here, right? Two wins on a bounce, and all of a sudden we're sat in that Champions League position. But, certainly the same in the Championship. It's been a good season, Toff, I think. I don't think anybody likes to see, you know, one team run away with it. I think, you know, it's testament to the quality of the Premier League and the quality of players that come to the league now. But, you know, it's not just four teams now that can compete, right? It used to be the top three, and then it became the top four. And arguably, Toff, it's becoming the top six and seven. And, you know, that... You know, as the quality continues to come into the Premier League, you know, that may be a top 10.
Yeah. Well, certainly looking forward to watching, you know, both the Premier League and the Championship as the season wears on. And I think it's going to be very exciting. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. Listeners can call in the show, talk with us live today, 760-283-0846. However, you only have about 15 minutes to do that. I know it's been pressing. The phone lines have been pressing the whole show here, Sam. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, highest-rated soccer training app available, and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and the iPad. We're going to move here to the States now, Sam. We're going to go into the MLS. Obviously, the off-season that we're looking at, but we are looking at some potential movements here in L.A. Beckham on his way out, clearly, but the rumor this week is that Kaká is on his way from Real Madrid and to arrive in L.A. Bruce Arena, when asked about it, was very coy, did not give up much in terms of, you know, if was he coming or was he not coming. Kaká did captain the Real Madrid side on during the week in the Champions League. However, it looks like in just some of the things that Kaká said in the media that he's definitely on his way out here in January. Is L.A. his next destination, Sam?
Well, I think so. You know, it's a fashionable club, and it's, you know, he would be, you know, how do you replace, you know, the brand David Beckham? Well, you replace it with somebody, you know, like Kaká, who, you know, even my, you know, I had the privilege of going to watch Real Madrid train with at a Jose Mourinho clinic in August down at the UCLA campus. And I tell you what, you know, everybody has sort of perceptions about players, Todd, but in practice, he was one of the stars of the show. And I'm not talking about his quality. I'm talking about the amount of effort that he was putting in a training. You know, you would think about a Brazilian player and think, well, maybe he's not doing the dirty work. But I'm telling you what, Todd, his work rate in practice over the 2 or 3 days we were there was absolutely sensational, and really caught the coaches that were there sort of off guard by, you know, how hard he was working. And again, it shows that the character of the player. You know, he's obviously not favoured by Mourinho, though Mourinho does rely upon him from time to time coming off the bench, and, you know, then and picks and chooses him to play in certain games where he thinks that he may have the type of profile for the team to be successful. But yeah, what a great signing that would be. You know, Beckham out and Kaká comes in. Goodness me, it'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be great for the league. Not so good for Seattle Sounder fans, obviously, but it would be great for the league. Obviously, Frank Lampard is another guy that has been rumored to be moving to L.A., although we didn't hear much on that this week as the Kaká rumors kind of took precedence. Have you heard anything more on Frank Lampard coming to L.A., Sam? And what do you think about that, the potential of that happening?
Well, I'll tell you what, if Kaká and Frank Lampard come to the team, Todd, they're gonna need to play five centre-backs because they're two attack-minded players, right? And those two have got goals in them, so... yeah, I mean, how great would that be for the league, for Lampard and Bukaka to come to, you know, the LA Galaxy? It obviously makes them much, much stronger again, you know, arguably stronger than it did, you know, before Beckham left. I think those two additions, Todd, really depends on what Landon Donovan's going to do. You know, he hasn't come out yet and said clearly what his plans are, what his intentions are. And we know for a fact that he's taking the winter off. He's not planning on going playing in Europe. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, but, you know, I don't see Lampard coming in January. I see him finishing his time at Chelsea and maybe moving after that. But, you know,
yeah,
you know, the amount of time that he's been over here visiting Los Angeles, you know, he's clearly a fan of the culture and the environment down there. And yeah, it would be a good match. You know, big Frank Lampard fan, and it would be great for the league, but not great for the opposition managers because...
No, but I think it would be good for the league. Some other movement this week, nothing too huge at this point yet. FC Dallas re-signed defender George John. It's a Washington State boy right there, isn't it, Sam?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
University of Washington. I think he was a Shorewood High School player. Anyways, he's going back to FC Dallas. Real Salt Lake cleaned house. Dealing four veterans that had, I mean, I was shocked, a little bit shocked by this, just four guys that played huge parts in their MLS Cup run in 2009. Fabian Espinola. Espinola, Olave, Jameson Olave, they went to the New York Red Bulls. Will Johnson is gone to Portland. Any thought on that? In addition to that, Justin Braun went to Toronto in exchange for a defenseman, Aaron Mount. Any thoughts on Real Salt Lake shipping these four players that have been, you know, they've been big players for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, the postseason, Todd, is an opportunity for reflection, and sometimes, Todd, you need to clear house a little bit if you're looking to take the team in a different direction. So, you know, maybe that's just the case. You know, you don't know financially what the situation is and whether or not they wanted to get these guys off the wage bill to bring some, you know, maybe a big designated player in. But yeah, you really don't know. It's always tough. It's tough for being outsider to look at these types of decisions and be critical, because there are obviously reasons for that. You know, maybe it's the, you know, maybe there's a little shift in terms of management style and how they see the team setting up, and you know, maybe they're just looking for a new identity. Maybe they've got some new players coming, you know, some younger players coming through that they feel that they would like to bed in the next couple of seasons. But yeah, strange that a team would release those four players of that type of caliber and players that have a big impact week in, week out.
Yeah, well, I certainly have a lot of respect for Jason Kreis, the manager there at Real Salt Lake, so I'm sure he'll get it right, whatever the situation is. I'm sure they have their reasons. A little bit more action there. Pablo Mastroni returns for his 12th season with the Colorado Rapids. He re-signed a deal. Here's a good one. Sebastian Letou is on the move again. He's got more clubs than Jack Nicklaus at this point. He's gone back to the Philadelphia Union. The Red Bulls, after being there for only part of the season, he's now spent time in 1 year. He's been at three different clubs. Started with the Vancouver Whitecaps, and then he was sent in July to New York. Scored one goal, had one assist in 14 games, and they traded him back to the Philadelphia Union, who is a team that had already binned him off after last year. Especially to a former Seattle Sounder player, a player that we're a little bit familiar with here. I know from my conversations with guys that were in the locker room with him here in Seattle, he was not a very well-liked character, maybe a little bit arrogant, maybe thought he was a little bit better than he was. And Sam, you know, we've seen him now through you know, five teams in just the span of 3 years. Any thoughts on Sebastian Letou?
Well, anybody that changes clubs that regularly, Todd, is a problem. Right? And, you know, if he is a top player and he is a talent, you know, coaches at times, you know, you manage people differently, right? If he's a top player and perhaps he's not doing the effort in training, but he can change games for you, then, you know, you compensate a little bit for players like that and you put other players around them. But yeah, he's clearly a problem. If he's moved that many clubs in such a short space of time, he's obviously a type of personality that they don't like in the changing room. And you know, as you know that type of culture can affect the performance of the team. So if he's a bit of a pain in the butt, then they're shipping him out. And I don't know why the union would take. It's interesting though that the union would take him back.
I was very surprised. But maybe it was a case where nobody else would take him. I also think that maybe, there's potential that he won't stay at the Union. Maybe that was just done to move that player and they'll bin him off. But we'll see how that pans out with Sebastian Letou. Just funny to see him on the move once again. I'm just glad he's not back in Seattle because his technical ability has not improved since he left here, and I would hate to have to watch him try to play soccer anymore. We're going to get on to the game predictor here, where I have taken a commanding lead, Sam, with a 10-5 record. You're at 7-8. This is a big week for you. You got to get back in this because I could really separate you right now with these four games we're going to predict. I'm going to try to help you out here. We've been moving around the last few weeks and did some different leagues just to kind of, you know, flavor it up a little bit. We're going to go all English games here, okay? And I'm going to try to get you back in this to keep it interesting for the listeners. So let's start on Sunday, Everton-Tottenham at Goodison Park. Sam, what do you think?
Ooh, I fancy this being... I see this being 2-1 to Tottenham.
Ooh.
And if I had a second choice, Todd, it would be 1-0 to Everton.
We're not at the point where yet where we're going to give you two choices, but we could move into that later on here.
Yeah.
But but Everton, Tottenham, Goodison Park. I like Everton here, and I think they're going to go 2-0 to Everton in that game. Moving on, moving to London, Upton Park. Let's talk about Liverpool and West Ham United. Sam, what do you think?
Liverpool, West Ham. West Ham were fantastic and physical for 45 minutes. You know, Liverpool without Luis Suarez, he looks like a big goal threat for us. But there's more to Liverpool than Luis Suarez, even though the stats suggest otherwise. I'm going to go with a 2-1 for Liverpool.
2-1 to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
I feel West Ham is confident coming off last week. I think Liverpool without Suarez is not the same team, although you're trying to convince me and the listeners otherwise. And I'm going to go 1-0 to West Ham in this game.
Okay.
I just feel that I think Liverpool is going to have a tough time going in there. Next game, let's do it. Let's do the Man City, Man United. I can't wait to see what you say about this game.
Yeah, I fancy this being, you know, Man City not played that well this season, right? And I just see this as being a game where they're going to really step up. I fancy this being a 3-2 win for Manchester City.
Are you sure?
Sure. United. Manchester United.
Oh, you're going to go back now. You want Manchester United?
No, I said City United.
Okay.
You're going to have to go back and re-listen just to clarify what it was. And,
I'll be sure to do that as soon as we get off the air here. I think that this is going to be a very difficult game for United. You won't find me doing this often, but I am going to go with City. I'm going to say City's going to win this game 3-1 over United. You will not hear me go against Man United often at all, but I just I'm just very worried about what's going on in the back. I think that the atmosphere at the Etihad is going to be fantastic for City, and I think you're going to have Carlos Tevez continuing to haunt his ex-manager Alex Ferguson, and so I'm saying Man City 3-1 over Man United, and I'm even going to go ahead and say Carlos Tevez scores twice, which will pain me. I will be buckled over on the couch early in the morning here on the West Coast. Last game, we're going to go to Monday. Fulham, Newcastle United at Craven Cottage. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think this is going to be a goal fest. I think Newcastle had a decent result this past week. Obviously scored 3 goals. Fulham are a really decent side. Obviously you've got Dimitar Berbatov, who's a sensational player, probably along with Mitrovic, probably is the buy of the season. I actually can't believe that anybody else has not gone in for Berbatov at the price that he was sold at. It's ridiculous. It's going to have goals in it. I fancy it to be 2-1 to Fulham.
2-1 to Fulham?
Yep.
Okay, 2-1 Fulham. I went against Newcastle last week. It was one of my only losses in the last couple of weeks. So I'm not going to – it's a tough one for me, but I'm not going to go against them again. I'm going to go 2-1 Newcastle in this game. I think they're going to come in and – I think they're going to get that win. But either way, I think I'm looking forward to all four of those games. You know, I think this morning, obviously, we had some great games. but not as good as what we're going to get here tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be just a fantastic day. We're just about to sign off here once again. I'm Todd Stauber. I'm with Sam Lady here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio. You can listen to this episode archived at cracksportspage.com. From the Touchline today was brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and the iPad. And Sam, as we sign off today, just want to wish you all the best tomorrow night on your stag night, and I will be there with you. From Sportsman Lady, I'm Todd Stauber. Have a good day.